Hello and welcome to Unabashed Book Snobbery, the podcast where we gush about George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire and flambé its flaccid adaptation, Game of Thrones.
This is where being a book snob is a good thing.
Why do critics give this show a pass?
To the empty
awful writing gets Emmys
up yet. Just makes a sense, but please ignore that. Here's some nudity.
Themes are just for eight great book reports.
Actors do a fine job, it's not their fault. Writing is so lame.
What you don't like are raised
life for. Judge's name is Sir Martin, we assure you. Misogynist watch as their raped or saved by plus we accidentally made the villains the protagonist.
We watch as a wonder season 2 was really won by season 3. You really see just what the show was. Who's the doctors in the party? See the party in the theater.
It's just a profess, that's why we are here to protest. This show sucks, Game of Thrones sucks, Game of Thrones sucks, Game of Thrones sucks, Game of Thrones
sucks.
My name is Kylie, and here with me are Julia.
Hello.
And Caroline.
Hi, everybody.
And we're all here. We can all hear each other. Woo! Thank the gods.
We had no technical problems whatsoever, but let's not bury the lead. Game of Thrones is back.
I'm so excited about it.
Oh my God. As our podcast title might suggest, we are a little bit skeptical about the show.
Just a smidgen.
Some have accused us of hate watching. I think that's unfair because I get so much enjoyment out of Dave Hill episodes particularly. But if you want to understand all of our unabashed book snobbery, you should visit thefandamentals.com, the website the three of us write for, and we are covering it this season. Every Sunday night, we are live watching Game of Thrones with you, hopefully with no technical difficulties for the remainder of the episodes.
I think this week's theme is technical difficulties.
Oh my God, probably. And then our contributor Jess is doing weekly reviews, and hers is awesome for the first episode, so definitely recommend it.
Better than the BBC's is.
If you like what you read or you like what you listen to, you might want to consider contributing just $3 a month or $30 a year. That's even cheaper than $3 a month to become a Fandamentals Plus subscriber. That's right. If you go to thefandamentals.com and click on the little FM Plus button, you will be directed to a subscribe page where you can contribute and become a supporter and get access to store discounts and I think podcasts that we lock to everyone else and secret articles and also live hangouts where we draw the bingo board for Game of Thrones.
Sometimes we do other things.
I'm sorry, the Carol board. But yeah, if it goes a long way if you are interested. With that out of the way, here we are, final season of Game of Thrones.
It feels like only yesterday that it was 2 years ago, and we were so happy to have 2 years of a break.
Oh my God, right?
I mean, that's the story of my life.
I was listening to some of our older podcasts, and we were like, oh, well, we have 2 years. It's not until 2019. And I'm like, oh, sweet summer child. It'll be there before you know.
Time passes.
Yeah. We were so happy. So this week's episode was named Winterfell.
Was that what it was called?
Yeah, and we didn't find out its name until after it aired, because that is just so spoiler-filled that it would have really ruined everything.
Really? We didn't, like, I thought I just didn't know, because I wasn't paying attention.
No, like, they literally didn't release the episode title.
Oh, like, we'll be so shocked. Did you know that we're going to be in Winterfell this season? Like, huh.
Yeah, well, apparently...
Well, maybe in later season, it'll be more spoily, but, like, the leaks that we got for this episode were pretty damn accurate. And
they were 100%
yeah. So my recommendation to all showrunners in the entire industry is to just, like, make a show that's good enough to be watched when you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, because I would not say this one was. Now, for any first-time listeners, because some people do find us in between seasons, and as Caroline said, there were two glorious Thrones-free years. While we are very critical of Game of Thrones, what we try to do is actually engage with the stories being told and talk about it. So this podcast, these weekly podcasts, are going to be a little more jovial nature. We also tend to do more serious analysis pieces as the season airs and afterwards. And then Julia and I, of course, have our retrospective series where we consider one plot line at a time and really, really analyze it. Oh boy, I don't know why we do the things that we do.
Well, we've learned a lot about, like, feminism and literary theory.
It's true.
That's now,
true. The thing about this episode is that a lot of our listeners really don't like the show anymore and don't watch, so they don't know what happened. And, well, fortunately, we have an old friend with us, Shira Shinobi, to recap. And I'm just warning you now, Shiro is going to be a little long-winded, because boy, is this not a concise episode to talk about.
It was just so go, go, go.
Yeah, so I'm just going to turn the floor over.
Take it away, Shiro.
This week on Game of Thrones. Bitches, and what a resolution this season is shaping up to be! Things open immediately in Winterfell, where Daenerys Targaryen and the best army Westeros has ever seen arrives. A little boy scurries around to get a good view, reminding us that yes, D&D do rewatch the show! Well done! Arya is also there, but Jon overlooks her, since he's too busy warning Dany that the North is full of xenophobes. Oh, and Vale Lords. Perhaps his warning was with reason, though, for after a brief reunion with Bran in the courtyard, Jon introduces Dany to Sansa. His sister has the audacity to tell Dany that Winterfell is hers. Will her vile scheming ever stop? Things only get worse in the Great Hall, however, when Lyanna Mormont, the best littlest feminist, lays into Jon for kneeling to Dany after the North named him king. Yeah, seriously, what the hell, dude? Jon tries to explain that he chose for the North, and Tyrion adds in by saying that this is the greatest army ever. The Lannister troops will totally join them soon. Sansa asks how they're supposed to feed said troops. When will this horrible catfight come to an end? Tyrion and Sansa chat afterwards, and she basically calls him a big dum-dum for believing in Cersei, or should I say, good Queen Cheryl. Then Jon and Arya reunite. He complains about Sansa not immediately liking his new GF, and in a shocking twist of fate, no, it's actually shocking this time, folks, Arya sides with her sister. What? Is she secretly the waif again? Later, Davos proposes a proposal between Jon and Dany to Tyrion and Varys, and they act like this is the most unheard of, far-out idea ever. Dudes, it would solve literally every problem. Dany and Jon go to visit her dragons, and Dany suggests that Jon ride one. Just go ride one, why not? Turns out he's great at it too! Then they fly to a waterfall because romance and make out while the dragons awkwardly stare at them. So relatable for us pet owners. Back at Winterfell, Sansa informs Jon that Lord Glover is keeping his troops at Deepwood Mott. She points out that the lords are maybe a bit pissy about the whole kneeling away their kingdom thing. Jon once again explains that he chose to keep everyone alive, but Sansa implies that he chose for love. Elsewhere, maybe love is blooming in other places. Arya reunites with Gendry and the Hound. She asks her blacksmith friend to make her something. We'll just see how this one plays out, folks. Sam Tarly finally meets up with Dany, who awkwardly has to tell him that she roasted his father and brother alive. Whoopsies! Upset, he finds Jon at the crypts to tell him this, before then awkwardly segueing into how Jon is totally the rightful heir to the throne and Aegon the Sixth Targaryen. That's not how titles work, Sam. Down in Cheryl's Land, and Queen Cheryl receives word that the wall has fallen and is chuffed to bits. Parked nearby aboard a boat, Jon tells an imprisoned Yara that he is keeping her alive so that he has someone to talk to. Our main antagonist, folks. He heads to Cheryl's Landing alongside Captain Harry Strickland of the Golden Company. These sellswords are so excited to fight for the Lannisters, why wouldn't they be? But they did not bring their elephants. Cheryl is disappointed, but when Euron asks for the sex, she finally agrees. Turns out he is not boring in bed. I'm glad we have that knowledge now. Bronn of Blackwater must be boring in bed, however, since during a threesome with three sex workers, they gossip during the act. This is mercifully cut short by Qyburn, who interrupts to hand Bronn a crossbow, with which he is to kill the Lannister brothers. Why couldn't this wait just be on me? But Queen Cheryl has a sense of poetic justice and urgency, I suppose. Meanwhile, Theon pops up and frees Yara. No explanation. They sail off, and while Yara decides to take the Iron Islands for when Dany will inevitably need to retreat, Theon decides he must go to Winterfell and fight with the Starks. For reasons. The fight is indeed urgent, however. Up north, Tormund and Beric run into Ed and some of the other brothers of the Night's Watch, where they find the young Umbar Lord, a newly created wight, strewn against the wall with arms in a spiral surrounding him, White Walker style. Beric kills the poor lad with his flaming sword. But finally, Bran, who was still in the courtyard at Winterfell during literally everything I described, catches a glimpse of the now-arriving Larry. How would this reunion go down? That remains to be seen, all in this season's Game of Thrones.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, there's so much.
I tried to get it to be as short as possible. I even cut out little things like Euron tells Cersei he wants to get her pregnant.
Oh.
Anyway, discuss.
Where do we start?
Let's start with the opening.
Start at the start with the season one callback?
No, with the title sequence.
Oh, yeah, the new opening. Floor map.
I mean, it's kind of weird that they changed it for the last season when it's been the same the whole time.
Well, it's the same style, right? It's the same, like, we're looking at stuff. But, like, realistically, this season...
It looks pretty different to me, like...
Is it?
It's kind of, I know that it was originally, like, it's all CG, but, like, it looks more CG-ish now, whereas before it looked more analog.
Yeah, sometimes the higher the CG budget is, the, like, weirder and more rendered it looks. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, it looks like a cutscene from a computer game now.
Yeah. I mean,
it's lost the kind of clockworkiness that I liked about it.
Oh. Hold on one second. Can you mute that? Thank you, dear.
God, Griffin. That's the worst. What? You know
I like him.
Okay. If I don't like him, I would tell you about it.
That said, though, it needed to be changed because there are two locations this year.
Right. What? And it's like, I kind of get, like, the concept of, like, showing us. I think what they've done is they've shown us the path that the scaries are going to walk. But I also think it's kind of like it was almost in reverse, like because the title sequence used to start in Cheryl's Landing and then go elsewhere. They could have done that here. They could have still started in Cheryl's Landing, just gone north instead, and ended on the Broken Wall. That would have been dramatic. But like they did it in reverse. I don't really get why they did it in reverse.
They did a creepy snow. I think kind of chronological of how the season's going to go. But now that I think about it, like the Iron Islands was mentioned as a place Yara's going to be. I don't know. I mean. I thought it worked, but honestly, that's just because I was elated to see Floor Map.
Oh, so Floor Map. That was so exciting. I mean, like, it's clearly not to scale, or else, like, Floor Map would be absolutely enormous. But
any first-time listeners, we're slightly obsessed with the giant, giant map that Cersei, we call her Cheryl, commissioned to cover her floor, and it is just Floor Map. And Floor Map is a character unto itself, and it has taken all the pigment from all the clothing in Westeros, and it is great.
And Floor Map has finally been raised to the pedestal it deserves to be on, because now it's on the intro.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's being recognized. Because it wasn't really recognized very much in our Carol Awards, if you remember. It only won
I honestly don't think we're going to be using very many nicknames today, but I cannot get around Cheryl and Larry, which is Cersei and Jaime. And it's just, you just have to accept that to listen to this podcast. Yeah. I'm sorry. And Carol is what Cheryl used to be back when she was a nice, struggling soccer mom.
Yeah, before she decided to start waterboarding nuns.
Wineboarding, no less.
What the fuck is this show? I swear to Christ.
So let's talk through the Winterfell stuff first, even though I know this is like all of the episode, but I think it's pretty easy.
The entire episode in Winterfell was kind of constructed around being paralleled to the first episode of the series.
Right, exactly.
Was it? Was that the idea?
I think so. Well, because they start with, like, the Bran analog running around while the Baratheon theme plays, and Arya's, like, sitting in the same place that she was.
And they're like, by the way, I listened to the inside the episode because that's how much I love you guys.
Wow. Yeah, but thank you.
They are very explicit about this. Like, it's supposed to be a big thing that Arya moved aside to let the little boy go through because she remembers how exciting it was. And then if you listen to the music, it's the Baratheon theme again.
Yeah.
But kind of layered under it is the Unsullied theme. Huh. I actually really, really liked the music in this episode more than I think I have in the past 3 years. I thought it was really well done. And I think maybe this is just what happens when Rama Deshwandi has 2 years to prep rather than but 5 minutes.
Why are they playing the Baratheon theme? There's literally no Baratheons.
Okay, yep. That's the only issue. Like, I get that there's Gendry. One callback. And I get that we need to slap each other over the faces with this, but it's the Baratheon theme for the arrival of a Targaryen and...
And another Targaryen. But also, like, what does it... So parallels are cool and everything, but parallels don't do anything unless they mean something. So what is, like, what does it mean?
Well, I think... Well, like, they have, like,
I can
the
tell you
thing.
What it means. Okay, no, I'm sorry, Joy. You tell me what you think it means, and then I'll tell you what it means afterwards.
Well, I'm not sure what I think it means, but they have kind of, like... You know, they have that scene with Jon and Arya where they talk about swords. They have, like... A scene in the forge.
But I think that the scene with the swords, and we'll get there, was meaningful. I think that I actually, that was my highlight. But like, what is this? What is supposed to be?
So the theme of the episode or the intent of this moment, according to D&D?
Well, I think that like, they're trying to do something about like, how the characters have changed.
Yes,
like, especially
yes,
something like with Arya moving aside for the little boy and everything like that. And just that like they're here in the same place, but they've changed.
Right. Like these characters are all coming back together here in this place, but they've been through so much and so much is different now. So like Maisie is now a grown woman watching again, except they refer to the characters by their actor names, which is really creepy to me.
Yeah.
And then there's one point where they're like, this is actually a bigger moment for the characters than it is for us. And you're like,
what does that mean?
But it's supposed that those things are supposed to coincide.
No, I don't know what that means.
They just said literally these characters coming back together means more to them than it does to us. And it's like,
they don't exist, but
not
okay.
Real. Oh man, that's so stupid. So, I mean, I kind of get that. It's sort of like using Winterfell as the setting as like the static. The static thing.
More than
thing
one person has commented about how, like, the renovations at Winterfell have gone wonderfully.
Oh, yeah. Man.
It would really suck if someone had destroyed that place and burned it to the ground at one point. That would be really unfortunate.
Oh, God. Well, that might...
We talked about that in season 5, about how wrong it is that the...
That the Boltons that were able to rebuild it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, though... What was the first line of the season, the first spoken line?
It was a eunuch joke. We immediately almost got bingo in the first scene because there was Arya smirking. There was a season 1 callback. There was a eunuch joke. What else was there?
I think that was it. Missandei and Grey Worm didn't talk, so we don't know if they would have been subtitled or not. There were subtitles later in the episode. Yeah. But there's like a 3-second shot of the only tolerable characters.
Yeah.
I also think like the whole, they've gone through so much and they're back but different than before thing is a little bit undercut by how much of a hot mess everyone's character development has been the past X number of years. So like, I really, when I hear D&D talk about it and I hear what it could mean and I think about it, it sounds really cool. Mm-hmm. But then when you watch it play out, you're like, wait, is Arya able to emote this season? I don't even remember.
Yeah, she's emoting a lot more now than she was last season.
I do think the acting was pretty good. I mean, again, in comparison. But I mean, like, yeah, I agree with you. So, like, I think about things like, you know, in the books, if Daenerys ever goes to Winterfell, I'm going to feel so many feelings. And I was watching this episode, and there were tons of various scenes where, like, I didn't really feel anything, or I just didn't feel anything. And I was like, this should mean... Like, this in the abstract should mean so much to me.
I mean, there's one particular thing that's extremely that we're going to talk about later, that it should have been the most meaningful thing that's happened in the series so far, and yet it was just kind of like super cash.
Oh my god.
I know what you mean.
We all know what we mean.
And that's because the characters' arcs are kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, how, and then they fall into these tropes, like catty women. I can't get over these stupid catty women stuff that they do.
Can we talk about that? Yeah,
let's talk about specifically that moment.
Right. So, this was my low light was the general cattiness. Of course, all focusing around Sansa. And the fact that, I don't know why, Sansa Stark can't interact with any other woman without it being catty. It's like, has she ever interacted?
She's fine.
She wasn't doing anything.
No, I know she wasn't doing anything. I'm not saying it was her. I'm saying that the way they write her is that whatever woman she is interacting with, the relationship is being catty. Is there literally any woman that she's interacted with in the entire series where it hasn't been antagonistic?
There was that one scene with Marcella where Marcella was all like, oh, I don't know, what did she say? They were having like breakfast.
They were like
or
dinner
something.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, she was fine with Marcella there.
She was fine with Marcella. And then actually, I don't think she was catty with Marge because her scenes were queerbaity. So
Marge
was catty with Cheryl or Carol during it. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. It's a little mangled. But I do want to say like, she is, first of all, Sophie Turner killed it.
Of course.
You can see she's so upset with John, like so pissed off this happened. She knew there'd be ramifications, and yet she's doing what she has to do in this setting, which is, okay, you're saying something vacuous about how beautiful the North is, how beautiful I am.
Oh my
whatever.
God, I can't believe that happened. I mean, only a man would write that, right? A man could write that line.
Oh, what Dany says to her?
Yeah, she's just like, oh, I'm meeting this other powerful political figure. Let's say that she's beautiful. Like, only a man would think that a woman would say that.
No. Remember when Sansa did that to Lyanna Mormont and Lyanna yelled at her for it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then this framing is like, oh, Sansa, she should have been warmer about saying Winterfell is yours, your grace. Like, she is the Lady of Winterfell. She was just right in that moment legally recognizing Dany. That's a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
that is what she had to do. Yeah.
So what did John want from her? To be like, oh, you're my new sister. Hugs or something. I don't know.
Did you fuck my brother coming up here? You have a glow. Like, what? What are you supposed to do? Or like, boy, you're hot also. Like, I don't know. I don't know what she's supposed to do. Then the second catty thing is that inside the Great Hall, when everyone's kind of pissed off that Tyrion Lannister, of all people, is trying to like make a great defense of this arrangement, Sansa's just like, okay, you brought all these people here. You're saying more people are totally coming. How are we feeding them? Because I've been very focused on meat stores since John left.
Yeah.
And then
she hadn't done anything about that while he was here.
Then she's like, what do dragons even eat? Which is like kind of, you know, a funny thing to ask. Like, they're dragons.
And the answer is either, by implication, you, Sansa, or all of the livestock that you've been gathering.
Yeah.
So that people can survive through the winter. So what are those two answers?
Later the Dothraki are like, oh, the dragons aren't eating much. And then it cuts to the dragons and just all these charred corpses
around
them.
Well, did you hear
them?
The numbers? So they ate, I think it was 18 goats and 11 sheep. And that was her saying, oh, they're not eating that much.
I mean, my God. How often do they eat that many sheep and goats?
I don't know. If they're eating that, like, per day?
Yeah.
And that's a small amount. Like, and they need to survive the winter with everyone that's now coming.
Oh, my God.
But Sansa is being so mean by pointing this out.
Well, Dany should have been like, no, I totally got all this food from the Reach when I attacked Loot Train. Oh, but then I burned it all.
That's the other thing, too. Is like, did they actually come north thinking that they were gonna, did they actually come north with no supplies? That'd be odd.
I mean, the only person who seems to, like, know that people need to eat in this show ever is Sansa. This was the case last season, too.
And then, cue a fucking shit fit that Jon and Dany throw about this really innocuous exchange for the rest of the episode, to the point where, like, one of the first things Jon says to Arya of like, Beyond the Swords, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Like, really, the first thing is just like, oh, Sansa thinks she's smarter than everyone.
Ooh, Sansa kind of sucks, huh?
No, she just thinks she's smarter than you, John.
Although, look, I don't get Arya's scripting, ever. But I am here for her defending Sansa just because we were so starved for it.
Definitely. I have my first timeline question of the night.
Please. It won't be your last.
It probably won't be my last. How long bouts do you think it takes to march from, I guess, wherever? They were either at Cheryl's Landing or Dragonstone?
Yeah, they were at
Dragonstone. They sailed from Dragonstone,
to
right?
Winterfell.
Yeah. I think they decided they're going to sail to White Harbor.
Yeah.
And then march from
and
there.
And then ride up.
I think they would probably take, like, barges up the river or all that stuff, but whatever.
So the answer to your question, Caroline, is longer than it takes Pod and Brienne to go around Moat Caitlin to go back. Because they beat them there. I said Moat Caitlin.
You said Moat Caitlin.
No, I didn't.
You did say Moat Caitlin.
I know.
We haven't recorded, so we can do it.
Either way, Brienne and Pod were already there waiting when they were part of the pit scene meeting. Like, how did they beat them?
Well, this is my larger... Like, Johnny and Deadpan were on Dragonstone, like, trying to figure out logistics for a long time.
Maybe. This is my larger question. Why do they still think the Lannister forces are coming?
I guess just...
You think...
She's gonna
well, by
them
now,
in a
wouldn't
bit.
They have noticed that the Lannister forces have not marched? Like, I mean, this is the
How
point
would they
in time.
Have noticed? They don't have satellites.
Well, they don't have scouts or anything. They don't have, like...
And yet they knew the wall fell.
They're not, like, keeping tabs on, like, oh, that whole other army we're expecting that makes everybody mad and that we don't really need.
Hey, that's a good point. When, like, Kylie, the point you just made.
About when, that they knew the wall fell?
Yeah, Cheryl, Qyburn told Cheryl about it.
Yeah.
But at Winterfell, they only know about it because of Brambot.
Is that how they know about it at Winterfell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Caroline. I just don't want to lose that thought.
Well... And then, to Caroline's point a little bit, I would add, what Lannister army? Because I'm still so confused about that.
Okay, let's not retread that, Grant. It's been well trod.
Oh, yeah. It's a mess.
No, I mean, maybe Qyburn is a Green Seer?
That
would be
sense.
Quite a twist.
What a twist.
This is a really good question, though.
So I don't
it
know.
It takes them less time to go from Dragonstone to Winterfell as it does to take the Army of the Dead to go from the Wall to Winterfell.
That's another good point. Help? There's a That's lot a of problems. Point.
I mean, it's not, like, it's not impossible that the last scene of Season 7 happened quite a bit after the rest of the stuff in Season 7.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Because that's, like, think of the Winds of Winter versus, like, the Dance of Dragons timeline stuff. Like, just, it's kind of all over the place.
Okay.
No, you're right about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the Army of the Dead is at Last Hearth at the end of this episode, or a little bit beyond
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but we don't, like... Because, like, remember how Mel once rode from Winterfell to the Wall in, like, a day?
I'm confused about how Lil Umber got to Last Hearth so quickly.
He had wagons and horses.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry, I really like that scene with Lil Umber. He was, like, confused as to who was in charge and who he should be speaking to.
They were like discreet moments in this episode that were cute.
Yeah.
I actually like when no one knew how to call John, like, what to call John, and I'm here for that too, because I don't know what John is.
Yeah. I mean, like, in the same vein, Lyanna Mormont, you know, our best, what did you call her, the bestest, littlest feminist?
Yeah.
Who, like, that was... it's like what... The idea that, like, she can't accept... I mean, the other thing, too, is, like, if John marries Dany, he becomes king of the Seven Kingdoms, right?
Not automatically, no.
But hasn't that... But that's how we've seen it in the universe, in the show. That's how everyone wanted to marry Sansa. Because they'd become Warden of the North.
Yeah, but, I know, the one example of a queen regnant in Westerosi history, her husband didn't become king, so...
But in show history? You know, I
In actual history. In actual fake history.
Actual fake, yeah. Well, look, at least Sansa is legally recognized as the Lady of Winterfell, and John is legally recognized as, we don't know what you are, and we don't think you're actually a lord anymore.
Yeah.
So they finally, like, woke up.
I mean, he has no claim to be Lord of Winterfell. He was elected king.
Yeah, for reasons.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wait, do we have any, like, fine punctuation mark to put on the catty thing other than why?
It's the pattern. It's the continuing pattern.
I think how they're trying to frame it is that, like, the heroes, the far-sighted people, are the ones who can see beyond all this stuff to see that the important shit is the fight against the Army of the Dead. And, like, Sansa represents those, like, small-minded people who are still thinking about politics.
Yeah,
but I mean, she's not thinking about politics. She's thinking about the food stores.
But he's like, you're concerned about titles. I'm concerned about keeping people alive. But like, the titles also have meaning to the people of this universe.
Yeah,
and that's why.
I mean, Lord Glover is hiding. Who was telling us today via a live blog on our Google Hangout chat thing that like, people's problem seems to be not that they're not listening to Sansa, but that they misunderstand everything she's saying. Mm-hmm. Because like, that scene where she talks about Lord Glover and how he's not going to come anymore was her saying, oh, John, your title matters. He's not coming because you're not king anymore.
Right, exactly.
And he was just like, how can you say titles matter? It was just like, she just told you why.
Because literally
I told you the Undead's coming. Well, okay, John, but some people are kind of used to the structure that their society is built on. As I'm glad that you're such a revolutionary and Danny's such a revolutionary.
Danny, the hereditary absolutist monarch, yes.
Yeah, you know, the wheel breaker.
Oh, I love it. It's a great point.
John really isn't very title conscious, and that's what makes him dumb as a political leader in this universe, which Sansa has been saying from the start.
I mean, like, an actual revolutionary, like, understands the system he's trying to break down. He doesn't say that the system doesn't actually exist.
He's not a revolutionary. He's just kind of too dumb to understand the system. Because for him, it's just like, stakes more important. I like stakes. These stakes matter. And you're like, but John, reality.
So is Sansa upset with him because she thinks he's in love with Daenerys?
I mean, I think that's how it's being framed a little bit.
But what I'm getting is that she's more upset with him by this decision that he didn't seem to have thought through. Mm-hmm. And was the reason behind this decision actually logic and humanity driven? Or was it like hot chick in front of me with dragons?
And also, I think Sansa's just like a little fed up with being overlooked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who can blame her?
And like, honestly, it's not great optics. Like, yeah, I kneeled. I had good reasons. Also, we're totally hooking up. Like, I don't know. There's just something about that. I'd be upset.
Yeah.
So, but it's definitely being framed as a negative for sure.
Yeah. Speaking of things being framed as a negative, Tyrion and Sansa reunite.
Are they still legally married?
No, because they never boned. Therefore, their marriage magically disappeared.
Did they also get it annulled by like the Septon and like some foothills of Dorne?
Well, I don't know. Maybe Danny annulled it because Sam was like asking for pardons. So maybe she just like legally fixes everything.
Yeah, apparently she can like choose who's gonna be in charge of the Citadel too. Which,
yeah, okay. that was really bad.
But I actually so D&D actually gave Sansa credit for being right about Cersei to Tyrion. Mm-hmm. Like they weren't negative towards her at all. All they really said about this moment, because first of all, like, people are a little cold to Tyrion, and they're like, oh yeah, well, that's only happening because he's showing up, you know, as Dany's Hand of the King. If he had come on his own, he'd have gotten a different reception.
Oh, what did they mean by that? He would have gotten a better reception?
I think that's what they're arguing, that, like, Jon and Sansa would have been like, oh, my old friend, come here. But, like, Tyrion's a Lannister. Do they remember the War of the Five Kings at all?
I mean, the wars following the death of King Robert.
Like, all of season 2 through 4, do they remember any of this? And what was maybe motivating the Northern Lords?
I'm going to go with a solid no.
I don't think ever understood what's motivating the Northern Lords.
But also, why wouldn't everybody love Tyrion? He's so wonderful and great. So, of course, if he was just by himself, he would be welcome with open arms.
Yeah, but this scene is really just supposed to be Sansa kind of calling Tyrion an idiot for believing in Cersei.
And it kind of works.
We know she's right.
Yeah, I think it worked. I enjoyed it. Anyway, speaking of idiots, Sandor is there, and Gendry made him an axe. First of all, I didn't know that, like, blacksmithing was a transferable skill to, like, napping obsidian. But I suppose that's a small detail that I shouldn't get too hung up on.
Wasn't there a comment that, like, the wildlings were able to do this, and they're stupid, so it should be easy for you?
I didn't understand that exchange. I didn't know what they were saying.
It was kind of a conversation. And then Arya walks in, and Sandor is like, you're a cold bitch.
Yeah, well, he was just like, yeah, the last time I saw you, like, left me for dead. And she's like, well, first I robbed you. Ha ha.
Yeah, I didn't like that. I know that was one of those lines that they thought was going to be, like quip, but I didn't like that.
I think they were trying to make this, like, a really funny tone. I actually think they were going for a playful fun in an episode, a la, like, Marvel movies. But all of the jokes that they intended just fell so completely fucking flat.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, there was one that I liked, and we'll talk about it later. But
the Braun threesome is like a classic.
That was just classic sex position. You couldn't have this. Couldn't have a premiere.
But they're trying to make it funny because, like, oh, they're bored with Braun, and it just ended up being what is this terrible scene? Anyway, back.
They're very unprofessional. Those three,
right? Exactly.
Back to Arya. Yeah. Was she flirting with Gendry? Is that what that was?
Yes, and it made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, why did it make you uncomfortable?
Because I've always found the Arya-Gendry ship uncomfortable in the fandom, because Arya is so much younger. And
in here, I don't, because Maisie Williams is, like, I don't know, 18 at this point.
Yeah, but when they first meet, she's much younger. You know, like her character is much younger. Like, I don't know.
I agree.
It just gives me, it was kind of squeaky, and I was kind of like, eh. It wasn't comfortable.
I totally agree with that in the fandom. I'm less uncomfortable by it here now that they've been apart for a while and she really is, like, she doesn't seem that much younger than him. I don't know.
Or at least she seems like an adult.
Yeah.
But, like, what she wants him to make, like, a Valyrian steel sword, right? That's why she gave him the dagger?
Yeah, I think a Valyrian steel needle is what she wants.
Okay, so he can reforge Valyrian steel now?
She didn't give him a skill dagger.
That only, like, two blacksmiths in the whole world had.
Wait. She didn't give him a dagger. She showed him the dagger, but she kept it.
She showed him the dagger. She didn't give it to him?
No, she didn't give it to him.
I thought she did. I thought the implication is that she wants a Valyrian steel needle.
I'm pretty sure she kept it. I'm pretty sure she took it out, showed it. He called her a rich girl, and she put it away.
Wait, so what does she want?
I don't know. I couldn't tell what was on the needle. I couldn't tell what was on the drawing. It looked weird.
Is it like a big crossbow for dragons?
I don't know. That would be too dastardly. Nobody could think of that.
No, I mean, that's what I assumed, but I think she did keep the dagger. I'm assuming he has to be reworking the Valyrian steel, which, to Julia's point, is not supposed to be like this casual thing. He's good. He's very good.
He's very good.
All right. So we only have two more things talking about before we talk about Super Cash, okay?
No, I was going to say, let's talk about Arya and Jon's reunion.
Okay, I liked that scene, actually.
Yeah, Caroline really liked it. I was just like, whatever.
I actually thought the writing was subtle in ways that this show is never subtle, so I was, like, very shocked.
Yeah, well, Dave Hill, you know.
Right, so yeah. Every now and then. So I really enjoyed when she pulls up the sword. First of all, them talking about swords is the kind of thing that they would talk about, so it, like, felt organic in that way to begin with.
I liked when he showed her long claw. Like, right, that felt nice.
Exactly.
That felt
nice, and then she shows him needle. She's like, oh, I still have it. And when he says, have you had to use it? And she says once or twice. Like, that has a very, that was a piece of subtle writing that I wasn't expecting and does have a lot of meaning, even in the show universe, because she has killed a lot of people with it. And that she's all, like, you know, messed up and stuff and trauma.
To be fair,
I like
she
that.
Did most of her murdering with wine, but yeah.
Remember,
I mean, like, percentage-wise, yes.
A duel with Brienne, and Brienne had, like, a longsword, and she had, like, the tiny little practice sword.
I don't want to talk about that.
I mean, that, like, yeah.
No, I agreed. Like, it was actually really nice. And it felt sibling-y, you know?
Yeah.
Now, according to Benioff and Weiss, which God knows why I'm still doing that. Arya was the only one who treated Jon like a member of the family when they were young. Ouch, Rob. And he was the only one who treated her with respect.
I mean, remember when, like, he was terrified of Catelyn, but he still went to say goodbye to Bran, even though he was unconscious? That's probably because Bran was always really mean to him.
And Sansa was just awful to him. But according to D&D, also, blood is definitely thicker than water when it comes to Starks. And that's why, and they say, like, Arya's on Sansa's side. So.
In my head, I just, like, have, like, period, question mark. Like, I don't really understand how.
I got an ask where someone said Arya being, like, don't forget it. Like, don't forget that you're part of this family to Jon. Red is a threat just because of her last year. I didn't really see it as a threat, but.
No, I don't see her threatening Jon. First of all, he's not a woman.
No, I didn't see that as a threat. I saw that as her saying, almost like, ask, genuinely asking him, like, don't forget, like, us, like, the family.
Yeah.
You know, with your new
but,
hot girlfriend.
I mean, I guess it's fair. Like, she does have a pattern of wanting to stab her family members and wear their faces, so.
Hmm. But it was fine. I like that. I like that scene.
Anyway, after that, one of my highlights, Alice Skarsgård arrives and, like, Royce comes out to greet him in his giant breastplate and, like, escorts her in.
He's like, oh, come in, madam. Like, what? Is he, like, a seneschal now? What's going on?
Maybe he is. I mean, need I remind you, he's a Vale Lord. He's not even from the north.
I love that. I love that the Vale Lords are just parked there forever. Like, okay. Alice Skarsgård. Greeted by Lord Royce. And then, okay, the scene after that is, first of all, Dany, like, starts by being all, your sister doesn't have to be my friend, but I am her queen. And I'm like, yes, you're not here to make friends.
I mean, how dare one of your most powerful lords bring up a good point at a meeting?
About food. It was, like, so innocuous.
I mean, maybe they should have had a pre-meeting before they said that in front of all the lords, but...
is always their problem, right? They don't prepare anything before they present it to the group.
Then the Dothraki show up and say the dragons aren't eating, so Jon and Dany go to see the dragons.
Oh, this is like the...
I rewatched the scene twice, and I still do not understand how she transitioned into, let's ride dragons.
Mm-hmm. No, it was just, nobody liked this scene. Like, I've read a bunch of reviews. Like, just to infuriate myself this morning, I read a bunch of reviews. Nobody liked the scene. Everybody called this sequence the low light.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting because my friends at the courthouse had the same reaction. They were all kind of like, the dragon ride. They, like, we didn't like the dragon riding interlude. And you know what it is? And I think we're probably in agreement on this. This should have been really, really important.
Yeah.
And it was played off like a comedy scene.
So, it was... What do I hold on to?
Whenever, like, they have a whole thing with, like, the dragons being super important, but they only seem to, like, understand them as important as, like, a military asset,
mm-hmm.
not as, like, a spiritual
thing. Yeah, like, they change calculus in battles.
Yeah, there's the same problem with the direwolves. Like, you know, the direwolves are scary, and they can, like, rip people's throats out in battle, but, like, they're essential to the, like, mythical, spiritual aspects of the characters. The same way that dragons are.
Yeah, so Jess actually had, I think, one of the best points I've seen about this all day, which was that, okay, according to Benioff and Weiss in inside the episode, and you guys are just going to have to kind of, like, sit with this one for a minute.
Okay.
Only Targaryens can ride dragons. That's what they say. Okay.
Only Targaryens and only, like, Valyrians or anything like that?
Only Targaryens is what they said. So, first of all, like, we just have to assume Dany didn't know that arbitrary rule before asking Jon to ride a dragon.
Right?
Because that means she either A, figured out he was a Targaryen and realized she was probably fucking her nephew but then didn't say anything, or B, was, like, totally fine with the idea of him just dying. So we're just going to have to assume Dany didn't know this.
Yeah.
But what Caroline's...
But just, like, I can't believe that no one else has tried to ride them in all this time then. Like, well, none of the Dothraki tried to ride them through it. They want to die.
And what Jess's point is that why did this not come after Jon was told he was a Targaryen? If that's the rule, and maybe it could have been this nice, like...
Yeah, he'd be like, no, I can't be, but I know I am deep in my heart, so, like, let's try to ride this dragon. Oh, shit, I can ride this dragon. Oh, shit, it's true. Like,
He suggested to...
That would,
like,
have been
he tells Dany about his parentage, and she's like, why don't you give it a try, Jon? And then... You know, like,
he should have been crying while this was happening, basically.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I should have been crying while this was happening. Exactly. That's the problem, you know?
Instead, we were like, why is this happening? And is this just a reference to How to Train Your Dragon 2, which Kit Harington was in?
Oh my god, don't even make that suggestion because it's probably true.
Like, it just was so nonchalant. Hey, get on a dragon. I don't know how to ride a dragon. Well, no one knows how to ride a dragon.
Cool, thanks. Cool story, Dany.
I mean, it's not as though, like, you know, lots of Targaryens and also not Targaryens in the history of Westeros have rode dragons.
Nope, only Targaryens. So also this means the Night King is, like, Rhaegar or something.
Oh my god. It breaks everything.
And then he'll be like, Jon, I am your father.
I mean, can Targaryen bastards do it? Like, could like, Brynden Rivers maybe ride a dragon? Or?
Oh man, it breaks everything. But this is actually, this is the scene where the one funny quip I liked was when he's like, what if I fall or whatever? And she's like, well, then it was nice knowing you. And I actually did laugh at that. I thought that was funny.
What if they don't want to be ridden? Okay, John.
So, but yeah, that would make a lot more sense after the parentage reveal. And there would have been that would have been actual evidence for him that that was true.
And it could have, like, meant something. Instead, they just, like, let's go riding. Wee, I guess you're a rider now. Let's make out here. And then the dragons...
cock-block them.
Yeah.
And according to them, that's supposed to be, this moment was Dany falling further in love with John. And then the moment where Drogon is staring at them and she's like, don't be afraid, is a moment that the dragons do accept John as a rider.
Unlike the moment when he was just riding them.
Was riding them.
Oh, and they say in the fucking interview, only Targs can ride dragons, and that should be a sign for John. He's not always the quickest on the uptake, but he gets there.
These men should not be allowed to be giving outside the episode, inside the episode interviews. They ruin everything with the extra details they had.
Trying to move us along.
Oh, we don't have
to hit every point. These are just my outlines.
Yeah, I'm just saying, we already talked about the next scene. So let's talk about the next scene where she meets Sam.
Oh my god, the Dany Sam scene. Someone was like, this scene just needed sad trombone music playing. Like, this was so bad.
So first of all, just like blanket statement. What's the actor's name? John Bradley?
Yeah.
Sam's actor? Way too good for any of this shit.
Oh my god.
100%
too good.
Are
too good for this show.
He's like,
I saw David Bradley, who plays Walder Frey, in like a Doctor Who thing a couple days ago, and he was so good.
Wow.
And he was so good in Broadchurch, in season one of Broadchurch. It's painful to see him on the show.
That also reminds me that you guys should watch Dairy Girls and watch Barry the Scary.
Oh, everybody. Okay, pause this podcast. Go on Netflix, watch Dairy Girls, and then come back.
Yep, we promise it's worth it.
So
anyway.
Worth it.
So, first of all, super awkward timing to tell someone that you killed their family. Like, you're thanking him for curing your BFF of the incurable disease. And
he's asking you for pardons for stealing books.
Did he not, like, go through the Reach on his way up to the Wall? Did he not, like, hear any of news of the war?
Maybe he heard that you could actually sail to fucking Old Town because it's a port. And that's how he left.
Maybe. No, but he arrived on the same wagon that he left.
Yeah, the same wagon.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He didn't stop to ask anyone what news of the war while he was traveling through the war zone.
Maybe he thought his dad was going to be mad about the sword stealing.
Yeah. And this means that this confirms that the Maesters didn't tell him. Because remember, I think last season or whenever it was, we were trying to figure out if him quoting Randall Tarly was him processing his grief. No. He was just quoting them.
Good that he didn't, like, run into the Unsullied marching from Casterly Rock to King's Landing on his way. Like, these intersecting pathways of armies running around Westeros last season.
Okay, so where are we? Danny's like, yeah, thanks for saving my creepy stalker. And then he's like somehow drops the fact that his name is Tarly. And she was like, Tarly, huh?
He asks for a pardon for stealing books and stealing a sword.
Uh-huh.
And then she's like, what sword or something? He's like, it's a family sword. I'm from the Tarlys. She's
and that's like, the part where it's like, Danny, you say, oh, that's nice. You're pardoned. Turn her tail and leave. This is not the point in time where you have this discussion. You are not the person like, tell him this news.
And then he's like, oh, okay, my dad's dead, but my brother's ruling. I guess maybe I'll be allowed home now. And she's like, well, your brother stood with your dad. So
your older brother. Was a thing.
In the outside of the episode, they called him an older brother.
I mean, I'm just going to assume that that's a slip because that literally, like, makes
Billy Bones looks this twice of. Yeah.
Yeah. No, just said that, but just like, then why was he at the Wall in the first place?
Right.
If he had an older brother who was a much better, like, heir than he was?
Yeah, no, they obviously just made a mistake on it, because even in the show, he's like, oh, the sword would have been mine, so I think they knew he was the oldest, and
I thought they said older brother in the episode.
No.
No, I went back through the transcript.
Oh, okay.
No, they said it in the outside the episode. Inside the episode. I'm sorry. We call it outside the episode because it's so divorced.
We can continue to call it outside the episode, I think.
Yeah.
I think our listeners will forgive us.
I read this tweet that was like the conversation going on in the stand being like, my dog hit by a wagon. My pet goldfish eaten by the cat. My cat choked on the goldfish.
Oh, well, God. No, we haven't heard anything bad about Mama Charlie or Tiffany.
Well, so this is what I was thinking, is that they could have easily he still could have had this horrible reaction if it had affected his mom, because we saw that he's got, you know, this abusive dad, brother doesn't really know, but Mama Charlie loves him, and they clearly have a close relationship. We know about that. So, if his father and brother were executed as traitors, then where is Mama Charlie and Tiffany right now? Like, they can't just be chilling that horn fair. They've got to, like, something has to happen. Multiple bedrooms. And, like, that would have really affected Sam if he found out that his mom this whole time was, like, this, like, I don't even know, like, wherever she was.
And I don't think the writers know, so.
Well, that's the thing,
They thought about it. No, they just gave him this, like, super over-the-top reaction to his abuser dying, and
I don't really have a problem with that. I mean, those feelings are gonna be complicated.
Yeah, I think so. But it worked, but it was just like the way it was written was so bad.
I don't think it worked. I thought it was I think everything in the show breaks the suspension of disbelief. I thought it broke the suspension of disbelief. I could maybe see him getting that upset over his brother, but there wasn't. The relationship with his father was never fleshed out enough in the show to be complicated.
Got upset when he found out that his brother was dead.
No, like, he was already crying. He made
that jocular comment about how he can go home now and anything like that.
He was already crying.
But
I don't know.
I think he was holding it together a lot more.
But I guess the bigger issue is that the next transition was, I'm so upset because I just found out my family was executed.
I'm gonna run out into the road.
It's time for me to talk to Brandbot and tell John about his true parentage.
Oh my god, because
Brandbot is just chilling outside in the courtyard in winter, and
he's just blocking everyone's way and then telling them which way the plot is going. Yeah, like, it's so fucking bad.
Was Sam all like, "Did you know?" or whatever? Is that what happened?
Did he say that? I don't think so.
I don't remember.
I didn't think he said anything like that. I think they were just talking about it, and Bran was just like, it's time to tell John about his parentage.
Yeah.
And Sam's like, maybe you should tell him because you're his brother, and Bran's like, no, you should.
I mean, it's just like, he won't believe me or something, but like, Sam got this information from Bran, so it turns to the same thing.
Yeah.
Like,
and Bran has a line where he says, like, I'm not his brother, you are, or something like that. Which is
Sam and John are more brothers than Bran and John ever
were. But is that a Night's Watch reference? Because are we all still okay with the fact that he abandoned his vows? Like,
I think it's just supposed to be their relationship to one another.
They're bros.
Yeah. Okay.
They talk about sex sometimes.
Okay, but so then Sam finds John, tells him, I'm so upset that my father and brother were roasted by Dany. Also, you're the heir. Yeah. And according to D&D... hold on, where's the exact quote? Sam talking about Dany killing his dad and brother beforehand seemed like effective preamble to the parentage reveal.
What?
Is that what they think?
In what universe?
Yes! Yes, that's what they think. Just like, it was, we need him to talk about something before just being like, hey, yo, you're Aegon. So, this was effective preamble.
I mean, what about the fact that he just, like, nailed away his kingdom? Well, he had the better claim to her kingdom. Like,
that's not as effective preamble, Julia.
And it's also kind of like agreeing with Sansa, and we can't have that.
But I don't even know if it's really needed preamble, because it's kind of like it's like when you have to have a serious conversation with someone, and like, you
just say, like, dude, I have to talk to you.
Right.
Yeah. I learned something bonkers balls.
Yeah.
You're Aegon. You're Aegon Targaryen, sixth of his name. Oh my god.
And then my question with that is, John seemed to he was like quiet for like a minute, but he didn't have a lot of follow up questions. And
kind of in shock. We can't begrudge him that too much.
But I mean, like, I would ask, like, well, how do you know?
He said that he found the diary and then Bran did whatever Bran does.
He didn't really explain it. We're on a TV show and we don't want to, it would be bad to rehash things and exposit. But you know, it, I didn't find John's reaction to be enough before he just believed it, which is why Jess's point that about the dragon riding post the review would have been very good.
Yeah.
God, these are professional writers. How do they get away with this shit?
Yeah, they have master's degrees.
Oh my God.
They both have MFAs in creative writing. Like,
but like, it's also a pacing issue. Like, this episode was like,
pacing is hard.
The pacing was all over the place, but can you imagine if it had been flipped and we had ended with dragon riding?
Yeah, Julia, pacing is hard. They're fucking professionals.
Right. Yeah.
This was so bad.
I mean, like, imagine if they ended on the dragon riding and they finished with, like, Danny's, like, the music, like, a reprise of the music from the end of the first season or something like that.
Right.
That would have been pretty cool.
That would have been cool, but instead we get John being like, no.
And we open with the Baratheon
theme.
That's
impossible. You're lying.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Search your feelings, search your John. Feelings. You know it to be true.
Search your feelings, Aegon.
Oh my god. What did he say we do if somebody actually called him Aegon?
I don't know. Down a fifth of tequila? I forget what we said.
I mean, he's not, didn't call him Aegon. He's just like, you're Aegon. But he's like, yo, Aegon at some point.
Oh my god. Poor Elia Martell. It just, it doesn't get better, does it?
How could it? How could it?
And I guess, like, this proves that, like, the Aegon thing isn't from the books, because they basically made him Fagon right now. Because Fagon is supposed to be Aegon the Sixth, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's fine.
I don't know that this proves a single thing, other than...
That is one thing I was saying yesterday in our little...
But just, like the, in terms of the whole checklist effect of his name, his real name being Aegon, I don't think that we can call it a checklist effect anymore.
I mean, I wonder how much we're going to even be able to have checklist effect in this season, because I think it's...
Well, we'll be able to do it after we've read all the books.
Yeah.
It's just not... I'm sorry, this is not how claims work. It's not just like, well, we know the inherent truth is that you have this claim to the throne. Like, you need people... in mass to get behind that claim and support it, and to really
even Fagon, they're not calling him Aegon the Sixth yet. They're like, oh, this is Prince so and so, and with your help, he will be Aegon the Sixth.
Right.
So
The whole thing with the Northern conspiracy in the books and possibly crowning John is on the basis of Rob's will. Mm-hmm. It's a legal document that a bunch of people have and recognize the authority of. It's not a High Septon's diary that no one's seen and Bran.
Yeah, like if an heir is born in the woods and nobody hears it, like, he's not the king.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic.
The fucking Targaryen monarchy is not intact.
Yeah.
They've been deposed. And apparently Dany is breaking the wheel, or she's... not that she's a conqueror. I'm confused about what's happening.
Okay, you guys want to talk about the last northern scene, which is the...
Yeah, where...
the screaming child thing.
Oh, like, somehow all these peeps survived falling 700 feet.
Right!
And so now they're making their way to Winterfell, and they're at Last Hearth.
Yeah, this is one of the scenes where I think you can really see D&D trying to, like, marvel up the writing.
Yeah.
So Ed being like, oh, shoot him, he's got brown or blue eyes or whatever he said about it.
Yeah, and like, Beardy's like, I've always had brown eyes.
Blue eyes.
Or whatever, I don't care.
Yeah. But, like, they were really trying for, like, a yawk there. And instead of just like, wait, where are you?
They're at Last Hearth.
Where are you all again?
Yeah.
No, I know
so how they survived falling from the wall is not even worthy of being on screen, I guess. Because it's just so obvious that they would.
Little Umber Boy starting to scream, like, made me jump.
That was a good effect.
Was the intended effect?
Yeah, that was a good effect.
And I love how the spiral shows up exactly once a season. That makes me happy.
It makes it a theme. It's poetry.
I don't know why they picked that, to be perfectly honest.
Huh? They're so enamored with themselves. So they did it in the pilot, and they did it, like, one other time, and some fan was like, oh, look, they repeated a thing. Like, oh, we can repeat the thing. Look at us.
They did it in the second season where they find the first Ben.
Yeah.
They did it when Bran and...
the Wetcha guy, the two-eyed raven, is in their like flashback thing. The standing stones are in the form of a spiral.
Yeah,
there are a couple others.
No, they're
usually about once a season. They do the spiral.
There ends up being a couple, but I'm saying I think that what happened was they did it in the pilot, and then they did it one more time, and then fans started to say like, "Oh, there's a pattern," and then I think they got excited because they're clearly they engage with the fan dialogue. So I think that it sort of fed off of itself in a way.
I mean, they totally read our stuff.
That's why Royce came around with his giant box again.
They wanted us to win Carol.
The writing Sansa great. But no, like I guess maybe originally when that appeared, it showed like that there's an intentionality to the slaughters.
And then not even like an intentionally, just kind of like they're killing people to fuck with us.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about Cheryl's Landing. Oh. I'm bored of Winterfell.
Wait, do we need what about O'Larry? Is that still in the north?
Whoa, God, the fucking Larry face.
Yeah, so they left Bran outside for 3 days. Remember how
Bran was parked in the courtyard in winter?
For 3 days? Yeah,
it must have been at least overnight.
That's something a paraplegic should be doing. Like, you gotta keep warm.
It's at least overnight. It's at least one night. Minimum.
Yeah, so, Larry arrives. And this is the last scene of the episode. Larry arrives. And he, like, takes off his hood, and he's like, oh, look, I'm at Winterfell. And then, like, oh, he sees Bran sitting there. And it's super awkward, and he gets a Larry face. And that's how the episode ends.
Well, it's like poetry. See, it rhymes.
What does it rhyme with?
The ending of the first episode?
Where he pushes Bran out of a window?
It's like poetry.
So right after the episode...
I mean, like, that's what I was saying about the structure of this episode trying to reflect the structure of the first episode.
Right. Yeah.
Because, well, so, like, they ended on, like, a meeting between Larry and Bran.
Well, it's even more poetry because it's not this is a meeting, but last time it was a separation.
I think we have to...
so deep, Caroline.
And, you know, he's come back to this place, but he's different now and has been through things.
So, like, right after the episode, one of my friends texted me that awkward moment when you arrive at a place and you get off your... The awkward moment when you get off your horse and you see a kid you pushed out of a window 10 years ago. And it got me thinking about, it may very well have been 10 years ago. I have no idea how much time
nobody knows. All we know is that sometimes... Sansa has a period that lasts a month.
Baby Sam is still pretty small, though. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't seen him yet. Maybe he's walking
Maybe
around.
Maybe he was the boy that was running around.
Maybe. No,
the one other thing I wanted to talk about before we move on from Winterfell, I'm sorry, is Davos proposing a proposal.
Hey, I love Davos Seaworth. He's so folksy.
I mean, we kind of touched on this, but, like, Deadpan and Jon getting married is the most obvious thing that would literally solve almost all the political problems they are being confronted with
right now. It's actually kind of taboo that they're sleeping together and not married, and they're both, like, you know, people of, like, with, well, I guess he sort of has a name, but they're both people, like, of positions, right? Yeah. Like, they would normally, like, that wouldn't happen.
Do D&D know that people don't propose in this universe?
No, they don't, because they've explicitly referenced proposals before.
Yeah.
But,
I wonder if Jon will get down on his knee.
Like, back when she, like, dumped Dario, remember? She was just like, oh, I have to make political alliances in Westeros. So, like, this has been, like, seeded as an extremely obvious thing to do. Like, what other candidates are there for her to marry? Larry? Like, if she wants to marry to make a political alliance, he's really the only choice. Even, like, and oh, look, they happen to be in love. What a wonderful coincidence. Like, why
it's
is...
so lucky.
It's just, like,
why
so
is anybody framing this about this, like, wonderful, brilliant idea Varys has had?
But nothing lasts.
Okay, that's why they have to fucking have babies.
Thank you, Varys, for that.
I don't know.
All right, we have to move on. We have to go down to Cheryl's Landing.
Speaking of and having babies.
Where she's happy about the wall falling because she's evil.
Yeah, it's all part of her master plan to have to deal with the Army of the Dead herself one day. I don't know.
Well, she's hoping that, like, they weaken each other enough so at least she'll have odds fighting against
whichever side. But does she not understand how the Army of the Dead works?
No.
Oh.
She has a zombie guarding her. Why would she understand this?
This was my big question in the Cheryl's Landing snafu that occurred. Why did she sleep with Euron at this point? And
we're not there yet, dear. We're not there yet.
Okay. Too early. So, what else is there?
So
I think we... Yeah, okay.
So we cut to Euron, who's, like, still obsessed with Theon and taunting Yara. And he, like, talks about how... You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of when the Master had the 10th Doctor imprisoned in, like, a, like, aircraft carrier thing for a year in an alternative timeline thing. And he just, like, would taunt him all day long. So, like, Yara is the Doctor being, like, all oldified, and Euron is the Master just being all weird at her.
I didn't watch that, but I will note that this is testicle joke number two. Mm. Actually, it was penis joke, I think. No, he's his balls.
Yeah, he's his
balls. He's like, we're the only Greyjoys left, at least the only ones with balls.
Is that...
What about Priestly McBeardface?
Oh, yeah.
What happened to Priestly McBeardface?
I don't think there actually is Aaron in the show.
No, I'm quite sure they called him that on the website.
Yeah, the website. Oh, yeah, God. He's on the...
Well, that doesn't count. That's just, like, fan people writing what they think.
No, it was the official
comic. Yeah, he's on their family tree. Are calling testicles balls anachronistic in this universe?
Probably not.
If they are, that's a problem for TNT.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt it.
Not sure.
That seems like an obvious slang term.
Tell you the remember truth. When Danny didn't know what to call balls, and then Ygritte was calling them stones?
Yeah. Stones.
I mean,
anyway, Euron won't kill Yara because he wants someone to talk to.
Yes, like I told you, like the Doctor and the Master.
And I mean, then he references the crews being mutes. And I think Yana pointed out on the chat earlier that the boat is, like, quite phallic. That the, if you look at the boat, the squid is, like, it is. She's absolutely correct. And I think that's great. And I do think that was intentional. I don't think that was an accident.
I do like, though, that Yara's, like, you pick the losing side, and he's like, whatever, then I'll just sail away. It's like, okay. But he's really, really into having sex with Cersei.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. Next scene, Harry Strickland is thrilled to be here, thrilled to have this contract. He couldn't put elephants on the boat, and Cheryl's like...
super bummed.
Yeah.
And then, bummed to the point where post-coitus with Euron, she's just like, I really wanted those elephants. What?
I think that should go on a t-shirt. I think that should go on one of our new pieces of merch.
I just really wanted those elephants, guys.
Poor Cheryl. Anyway, so let's talk about Harry Strickland briefly.
No, there's nothing to say. What?
Okay, so he has, like, an accent. So we can surmise from that the Golden Company is just a random sellsword company and it doesn't have the Golden Company's backstory.
Well, maybe he's just been living in the Free Cities for a while and developed an accent. It's not to mean that he isn't coming from, you know, the Blackfyres or...
Well, Harry Strickland, like
that Western, like the Loyals.
Yeah.
Is what I meant.
I'm quite sure Harry Strickland actually grew up in Westeros, though.
Yeah, so they drop that.
Yeah.
He's just...
So just the Golden Company is just a bunch of dudes, is my point.
Just sellswords. Yeah. With matching gold outfits.
Yep.
Anyway, in answer to your question, Caroline, about why Cersei does agree to fuck Euron, I think she's just horny.
I mean, I understand.
Well, I mean, it was actually a Cersei-esque thing to do, is like sleep with a man to control him. Like, you know, that's exactly what Cersei would do. Yeah,
somebody suggested we should start calling him Euron Kettleblack.
That's cute. Oh, well, but here's my thing. Like, Cersei of the books would sleep with guys... you know, to control them or whatever, but it's like, it seemed like Euron was on board, like, regardless of, like, whether she slept with him in that particular moment. Like, she very much had the upper hand.
Yeah.
He was getting impatient, though. Like, he was, because he was like, well, what more? Like, seriously, I've earned a queen. If you want a whore, find one. If you want a queen, earn it.
Yeah.
What was that terrible line?
If you want a whore, buy one. If you want a queen, earn her. There was a few things about earning.
Dad texted me that. What?
There was a few things in this episode about earning the loyalty of the North, earning a queen, earning that kind of thing like that. Maybe that was the theme.
It could have been her controlling him. Yeah. I read it as her just being like, all right,
she hasn't married him yet. So.
But then he touches her stomach or whatever and she kind of starts to tear up. And then I have this question. This is my other question. Is she still pregnant? Because she's drinking wine now.
I don't think they know about fetal alcohol syndrome in Westeros.
But she did. But she refused wine last season.
Yeah.
Because of the pregnancy.
I think she's... I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess she's still pregnant.
Yeah.
Because this scene of her drinking wine and crying when he touches her stomach makes more sense if it had been preceded by the miscarriage scene that we expected last season.
I don't know if they know what they're doing, honestly.
And, I'm not sure. Whole thing with her refusing wine is just because she didn't want to drink with Tyrion. Who the fuck knows?
But that was part of what made Tyrion conclude, you're pregnant.
She was just trying to hang a neon sign that she was pregnant. It doesn't mean she actually cares about drinking wine during pregnancy. Mm. I don't know. We'll find out what it means later, I'm sure. And then he's just like, how was I? And she says, you're not boring.
Yeah.
But I still want those elephants.
Yeah.
I feel like she has to be pregnant with Larry, because otherwise why set up him being like, I'm going to put a prince in your belly? That's the tension.
Yeah.
You know.
She's going to have a cuckoo baby again.
She's going to have a cherry bomb.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay, so then Theon saves Yara.
Oh yay, my god. What's the biggest beer fart of a plot of Yara, we're going to rescue, last season where they were like, we're going to go out and rescue her.
Thing.
And then the plot is like Theon again, just like when he left Sansa in the North.
Yes.
He's like, I got to go somewhere else right now. Bye.
Yeah. We finally developed a relationship, Yara. Now we're going to fuck off.
Yeah.
Also, Yara punches him in the face when she sees him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how she shows affection.
Like Toph.
Yeah.
It was just like what they clearly dug themselves into a hole that they didn't have time to appropriately fill. And so they did.
Yeah. I mean, they had so little time this episode. I understand.
I'm honestly trying to figure out why they even want Theon in Winterfell, other than I think he's going to die in Winterfell, and then Yara can react and be sad about it later when she's on the Iron Islands. I don't see why else they would make that decision. It was so random. It was just like he heard the call of plot things.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, he has a history of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
And I like that Yara read the fucking scripts and knew that, you know, they're definitely going to fail. Yeah. Yeah. Of course she will.
It was super stupid.
That's
stupid.
Hey, we got through the plot. Was there anything else that we didn't have time to talk about?
Dany has a new identical white fur coat. It's slightly different because it's got it seems like it has a red in it.
Oh.
It's got a red thing.
Cheryl shoulder pads. Cheryl shoulder pads.
How much more intense can her shoulder pads get?
Yeah. And they're gold details instead of silver details like last year. That's interesting.
I just am ready for full World of Warcraft style pauldrons that is just going to be spiky and sticking out.
I'm wondering if what they're doing with her, and if I don't hate this, if this is what they're doing, so we'll see what Michelle Clapton says. Her armor pieces are sort of getting more insect-like. She's getting more things that look kind of, I can't really describe it any other way than insect-y.
Is she ready to shed another exoskeleton?
So I wonder if that's because they did an insect thing with Sansa for a while where they were she wears fireflies. And I'm like, why?
Wasn't it dragonflies?
Yeah, dragonflies. She's got lots of dragonflies. And I'm like, for what fucking purpose, you know?
She likes dragonflies. What? Does a girl need a reason to like dragonflies, Caroline?
In a world where all the houses have assigned creatures, yes. Yes, you do. But, I wonder
she could
if they
a personal badge or something, couldn't she? I don't know.
I don't know. I wonder if that's an inspiration, because it looks very like that. It does look like an exoskeleton, which is kind of hilarious. But, they're just super intense, and it's I don't know.
She's going to evolve again and become, I don't know, Meryl by the end of the season.
The good Queen Meryl.
We're out of nicknames.
Anything else in particular? I'm looking over the notes.
Yeah.
Well, no, let's take right now to check up on how we did on our official, not bingo, but carol board.
Yes.
And we got to get, like, another one for next week, another randomized one for next week.
So we're going to go through line by line. I'll be honest, though, our free space is so dark you can't see anything on your screen. I don't know if it's that I'm just watching on a better television, but I actually had no problem seeing anything.
What about the last, the part with the bros from the wall?
I could see who they were. You know what? The crypts weren't great.
Yeah.
The crypt was kind of dark.
It wasn't like...
I couldn't see the Last Hearth stuff very well, at least at the beginning.
It wasn't season 5 bad, though.
Yeah. It wasn't like, House of Dark and Vague bad, no.
Yeah. Like, that's my metric. So I think that could still be the free space. I think it was fine. I'm just saying I didn't have as bad of eye strain as I thought. Yeah,
it wasn't as agree. I mean, I knew when the episode started, for example, you know.
Yeah.
I think it helps that, like, we're at snow.
We were outside a lot, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so first square is Eudic Joke.
Okay, so wait, you want to explain?
Also the first line.
You want to just explain what this is, what we're reading off?
Yeah, so we're reading off of the official Season 8 Carol board, or bingo board, where Julie and I, on one of our Fandamentals Plus live streams, created this. We had a few people watching and giving suggestions too. So we just created it based on what we thought the show was going to do. And actually, Danzy challenged us to a bingo off, and she made her own bingo board on her YouTube. But I think we hit this one out of the park.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the graphic design of this is lovely, Kylie.
Oh, well, yeah. That was all me. I have a new computer now, and I was playing with Photoshop on it.
Aww.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to read them?
Okay. So square number one is a eunuch joke.
Yep.
And check.
First. It was the first line.
Yep.
Nonversation. Do you guys...
There were.
There's a...
You think so? I mean, like, the flow of certain conversations didn't go at all. Like, the whole thing about, let's ride dragons now... And let's discuss how I killed your dad. That was kind of weird.
Oh my god, we forgot to talk about Qyburn. Pop-up Qyburn.
What, with the sex
he
workers? We mentioned that. It's not important.
He just appeared.
Yeah,
he
apparently Bronn is on a mission to assassinate the Lannister bros now.
Yeah, but or he's going to be tested. Let's see if he could really do it. Because what I needed was Bronn to have a fucking arm. I'm going to say nonversation is not fulfilled. Because even though there were, like, awkward setups in the flow, unless we count the segue from Sam talking about I'm
sure that we'll have better examples of conversations.
Yeah.
Dave Hill is honestly pretty good about people actually talking to each other.
Okay.
All right, Arya smirks. Yes, let's check.
That happened in the first scene as well.
Two women are antagonists.
Check. First scene.
Poor Cheryl, she looked real sad about the baby thing.
She looked the really elephants. Sad about not there being elephants.
Poor Cheryl. O'Larry. Yep. That face at the end. Perfect. Was like the most O'Larry mm-hmm. face. All right. Forced John Danny romantic moment.
All over the place.
Yeah, I mean, that date was pretty forced.
Yeah. My dragons Deadpan's aren't eating. Hair... Let's go ride them.
Deadpan's hair doesn't move.
Dragon
well, she was
him.
Flying a dragon and her hair didn't move.
Yep.
Season 1-2 callback.
All over.
The entire first episode was basically a giant season 1 callback. Yeah. Okay.
Ned's story.
Not really. I mean,
yeah, there really wasn't.
There was a reference to the fact that Ned never tells a lie or whatever.
I mean, is not the entire reveal that Jon's whole parentage has been a lie a Ned story?
I think that's a stretch. If we're going to be super fair, I think we should
Sam
leave that one blank.
Sam did say, like, here's why your dad lied. I don't know. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I was thinking more along the lines of the Stark kids being like, remember when dad slow-clapped?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're trying to be generous.
Okay, so
right now.
Not that one for now.
No conversation. No that one. Okay. Someone is mean to Tyrion.
Yes. Well, Sansa called him dumb.
All the Northerners didn't like that he talked. How dare they?
Book reference. I think, honestly, Harry Strickland and the Elephants was a giant book reference.
Yeah.
Because, like, what else was that?
And even Aegon the Sixth. Yeah, there was sex worker sex, and there was Euron sex.
Mm-hmm.
Sexy sex. Copying Lord of the Rings. I did not think so this episode.
No, I couldn't find anything on that.
Don't worry, we're going to get Helm's Deep soon. Hmm. Oh, no one listens to Sansa.
Okay, that was basically all the theme of the episode.
Bran's robot voice.
We don't have time for this.
Royce wears a breastplate.
Always.
Always.
Slow walk across the screen.
I mean, it wasn't as bad as it has been in the past.
I didn't think it was that bad.
I can't think of it, no.
I mean, there was the army slowly marching in a way that seems extremely uncomfortable to be doing for long distances.
Oh my god. Davos is folksy.
Always.
Uh-huh. Okay, inverse episode title spoken out loud. That's not really fair. No. His name Winterfell. Of course it was. But yes, that check.
That happened.
Subtitles, check. Yeah.
Gendry looking hot.
Always.
Always. Whites die from normal weapons. No, actually they needed fire this time. Mm-hmm. And Euron mentions Theon.
Yes.
Yep. So let's see how we did on the official Carol board. Okay,
well,
so
the first column.
One Carol on the diagonal. First column, other diagonal,
the middle column.
Yeah,
right?
We have the R.
We have the C.
Middle column. We have the R.
Mm-hmm. Not the L.
And not the L. Yeah, so we have a C. We have a CR, and then the diagonals is what I'm getting.
Yeah, and then
do we have any horizontals? Not that one.
We don't have any horizontals.
Really?
No.
Yeah. So we'll do better. Although someone got a Carol like instantly.
Yeah.
Like we weren't even 20 minutes into the episode. They're like, I already have a Carol because they had one of the shuffled boards.
Yeah.
So they had like a horizontal already.
Nice.
And non-forsation, like it's touch and go. It could have been one, but
yeah.
There weren't any that were egregious enough, I don't think.
No. Ditto for slow walk across the screen. We could have had an O, but
yeah, but we're again.
Still not bad. We had four bingos on one board, or carols. I'm sorry, four carols.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I'm excited to do this again.
Yeah.
How many episodes are in this season?
I also wanted to just talk very briefly, and I know we're at almost an hour and a half now, but I just want to very quickly go over some of my favorite quotes.
Okay, let's do it.
So, okay, or moments, but like the first is just Bran interrupting Sansa and Dany meeting each other for the first time, going, "We don't have time for all this." And just like the way
that's
he did
so
it,
meta.
Teaching, yeah.
Like when we do the carols, yeah. Like that has to be one of the most meta lines.
Little Lyanna Mormont had the best thing. You're Grace, but you're not, are you? You left Winterfell a king and came back a. I'm not sure what you are now.
A Bolton.
John on being the king, he was like, it was the honor of my life. What? As if, like, he was just selected for a reality show. Or something.
He got
it was
nominated
such an
for
honor,
an Oscar.
Guys. And then fucking Cheryl. Oh, I'm one of those elephants.
I think I'm going to treasure that line for the rest of my life.
I'm one of those elephants. A proposal is what I'm proposing, of course.
Love it.
She doesn't need to be my friend, but I'm her queen. I love Dany saying what she's not here to do. Drogon staring as Daenerys made out, classic. Yeah. Pop-up Qyburn, also a classic. Then Jon sitting in the courtyard for 3 days.
Bran sitting.
And then finally, you're the true king. Aegon Targaryen, sixth of his name. Protector of the realm, all of it.
I wonder if he's king of the Rhoynar.
Oh my god.
Guys, I think I'm going to get I Wanted Those Elephants tattooed on me somewhere.
That's a big step.
I just love it. So it's right next to where I'm going to get Promise Me Ned. Like, I'm going to get I Wanted Those Elephants.
I just like that she's bitching about it post-sex with Euron.
And she's like,
she was
thinking
about
it the whole time. Like, staring at the ceiling going, where are my elephants?
I think my favorite part is that the spoilers of episode one, it said, like, Cersei is disappointed that there weren't elephants. And I thought she was gonna, I don't know, be pissed about something or, like, mean to Harry Strickland. But, like, no, she's just really sad.
Oh, my God.
Okay,
so
do we want to talk about the previews?
Next week?
I didn't watch them, so why don't you tell me?
I didn't watch it either. Did you watch it, Caroline?
It didn't play after my episode, no.
Okay, so apparently, Deadpan's gonna be really mad at Larry. That's, like, all I know about it. And, like,
oh,
she's going to want
totally
to put
lied.
Him on
it
trial
play.
For killing Aerys.
I totally lied. Wait, I did. It did play. Outside the episode didn't play after.
Wait, what?
So she's they're gonna be like, hey, you're the fucking Kingslayer and you killed my dad. And in retrospect, Larry should have really thought about that before he went up there, because he can never join Team Targ.
No, like, didn't Tyrion already tell them what happened? I thought Tyrion like knew and he talked to Dany's people about this already. Where remember, because we're like, how does Tyrion know that he saved everyone in King's Landing? Like, I thought they gave him that knowledge. Oh my god, am I just making shit up?
No, they did give him that knowledge. You're right. He mentioned it. Oh,
he's such a great guy that he doesn't think it's his story to tell. So he would never, like, you know.
No, Tyrion does tell Dany. He tells us, okay, listeners, comment and tell us where this happens. We know. It happened somewhere in Essos. It happened somewhere when they were in Meereen. He mentions it. He does.
I know he does. And you're right. It's like in one of his
But I don't think he was talking about like the wildfire in the city and stuff. She was just like, "Oh, your brother killed my dad," and Tyrion was like, "Your dad sucked."
Okay, it didn't come up then. I don't know where it came up. I'm sorry. I thought I did.
It's okay. Our listeners will find it for us.
Yeah, someone please tell us, because I know what happened. But I hope that, like, during this trial, Sam is grumbling the whole time, like, where's Danny's trial for killing my dad?
Yo, I'm sure that's going to happen. That's a great, great prediction.
Maybe Alice Karstark will be mumbling too.
Well, if we can forgive the sins of the father, but can we forgive the sins of the son who kills the father?
Oh my god.
Is it the same thing?
This is reminding me.
Is that your, like, legal argument there, Caroline?
No, I don't know. I'm like, you can't see me, but I'm shrugging my shoulders. I have to stop doing things with my hands, because you can't see them.
Anyway.
Wow, guys, we talked for an hour and a half about an episode that was 55 minutes long?
I mean, we were mostly laughing about elephants, but...
Fair. I just wanted those elephants. She must have been mad.
How many more episodes are there? How many are there in the season?
Five?
There's five left, yeah.
There's five left, so there's six total.
Yeah, next week is 58 minutes, and then begins the fucking marathons.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing next week is, other than the trial stuff, is going to be all, like, getting ready for the big battle in episode 3.
I'm sorry, guys. I just got an ask, like, right now, shit in gold sent to me, saying I finally narrowed down Cheryl's motivations. Number one, protect your children. Number two, do things because they feel good. Number three, elephants.
I mean, their eyes look like her eyes.
That's a Crazy Ex-Girlfriend reference. Go watch that, too.
So relaxing at the zoo.
Favorite pacing moments. Long procession. Dany. Hi. Sansa. Hi. Brandbot. No time for small talk. Go. Next scene. Council meeting. Oh my god.
Oh well. All right.
I kind of hope the next episode is a musical episode, because that's the only way I see the trial of Jaime Lannister working.
I mean, we know he has to survive it, right? So there's, like, no stakes in this whatsoever.
How do we know he's going to survive it?
He's going to survive the series.
You think so?
Yeah.
No, because Bronn's going to shoot him with a crossbow. Didn't you watch this?
No, Bronn's going to go and see him and realize he's in love with him, and then...
All right.
That might make the entire series worth it if Bronn and Larry become canonical.
Oh my god. I hope they just passionately make out when they see each other, and then...
No, seriously, the whole thing would be worth
I'm definitely, I'm here for it. I should.
Yeah.
All right, I will say, like, just concluding thoughts about this viewing experience, that I was exhausted by the idea of doing this again, and I'm, like, elated now. This episode was hilarious.
I would not say I'm elated, but I'm here for five more episodes. Except for next week, we might have to record on Tuesday, because I have a staff meeting.
We'll work it out. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
That should be fine. It shouldn't have
very, very profesh that we're organizing our schedule now. If you are listening to this podcast for the first time,
we're sorry.
Thank you. This is what you're going to get all season, and we're usually a little bit better structured. No, we're not. What am I even saying?
Really. This was great.
If you listen to this podcast and you have show loving friends who you think would benefit, then you should tell them about this podcast.
Oh, God.
You could also subscribe to us or leave us a review in whatever podcasty app thing you listen to it on. Mine is called Podcast Addict, but everyone has something different these days. We're on the iTunes, so you can find us there. Otherwise, you should drop by thefandamentals.com for our continual Game of Thrones coverage throughout the season. And you could also consider being a Fandamentals Plus subscriber, because I have to mention that twice a podcast. Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's what our corporate overlords tell us.
No, it's just otherwise I'm going to forget to mention it ever. And yeah, other than that, we are psyched to be here. We're probably going to have special guests joining us in the future weeks. So be warned. I don't know. Get hype. Something or other.
I'm hype. I'm so hype.
I'm excited about our guests.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening, and happy shitting.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
We were gone all last year when we could live without fear, but now the fandoms reappeared to heap on empty praise and cheer the nonsense in the pit. Didn't alert viewers to this shit, so once again the show won, 'cause now Emmys just mean fun. We've made it here to season 8, where there are clear simplistic stakes, though we must appreciate the idiocy of our characters' face revolting to the end. Who knows how it'll offend, 'cause this show sucks. Game of Thrones sucks. Game of Thrones sucks. Game of Thrones sucks. Game of Thrones. It's just bad. It's bad. Take my word for it. It's bad.
Horses.
2,000.
And elephants.
No elephants, Your Grace.
That's disappointing. I was told the Golden Company had elephants.
They are excellent beasts, Your Grace. But not well suited to long sea voyages.
In any event, you are most welcome here in King's Landing, Captain Strickland.
Many hours later.
I wanted those elephants.